This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Well, good morning, Melbourne. This is the Escape Hour on Joy 94.9. And what a great start to the day it is. My name's Russ Masterton and you are listening to the Escape Hour on Joy 94.9. We hope you had a lovely Saturday night. Here with me today, I've got the gorgeous Fiona Brooke. How are you, Fiona?
I am super. Absolutely. Thank you. Having a lovely weekend.
And the man behind the panel, the lovely Stefan. How are you, gorge?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you.
It's very early this morning. I'm not used to these early morning wake-ups.
It's insanely early.
I'm on to my triple latte, God knows what.
And it's a new regime.
It is a new regime. It's the only way to go. We're morning people now, aren't we?
We are indeed. So we are this week actually going to talk about me.
Yes, all about you, Fiona.
Yes, and we love it when it's all about you, doll.
I love it when it's all about me too.
Where are we going?
We are going to Georgia.
Not USA.
Not USA.
Oh,
I know. Exciting. Look, I would love to go to Georgia in the USA, but this time we are talking about Georgia in the former USSR.
Oh, you're one of those caucus girls, are you?
I am. And, well, wow. Actually, this is the first time, yeah. The first time to that section of the world. I've never been near Russia before. And, of course, now super keen to explore more. I mean, it's right next to Azerbaijan, Armenia. And then you've got Russia on top. Actually, you've got Chechnya on part of it as well. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about Georgia is, well, I mean, many, many things, that it is a country that has a terribly long and complicated history with the USSR.
Yes.
And actually, the Georgians are known as the first Europeans.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So the Georgian culture, they've been making wine there since for 8,000 years.
So what's made you decide to go there? What was the attraction?
Well, it's a bit of a I'll try and keep it brief, but a girlfriend of mine has been banging on about going to Georgia for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And she decided to go because a few years ago, she went to a party. She met a guy there who was an Australian journalist who was based in St. Petersburg.
Oh.
He told her that he and all his journo mates love holidaying in Georgia to the point that they eventually bought a whole house in Kazbegi, wow. Which is the incredible mountain region in the north. It's up near the Russian border. They bought a house there where you can rent this whole house. Cool. So actually, I tell a lie. It's in the Kakheti region, but I can get more to that later. It's going to sound a bit obtuse until I break up all the different regions. And so one of the reasons why she wanted to go is because of the wine culture.
Right.
The viticulture and the wine is, you know, a part of, you can't separate Georgia from that. And also because of the beautiful, wild, mountainous areas where you can go walking. And then, of course, you've got the capital city, which is Tbilisi. And then, coincidentally, of course, I had met a Georgian winemaker.
Oh.
No, he's not Georgian, but he has a Georgian girlfriend and he imports Georgian wine.
Wow.
And he's been on our show before. Aidan Raftery.
Wow. Yeah, that's right.
So and there's a bit of history with you and Georgia.
That's right. And we, you know, had Aidan on the show a couple of, maybe earlier this year. And he came in and he was so charming and lovely and talked up Georgia and talked up the winemaking. And, you know, so it was really a done deal.
So you decided, he came on the show, sold Georgia to you and you decided I have to go.
Yeah, well, it was like a combination of things. So,
it's a newish place. It really is. I know in travel, our little travel agency, we often have people requesting tours to the Georgia, Azerbaijan era. And it is very popular now, so I can completely understand why you wanted to go there. But, you know, like with anything new, now is the time to go, right?
Absolutely, because the thing about Georgia is that a lot of people obviously are going, what, where? However, it's already a popular tourist destination for Europeans. But we also met Japanese, Chinese, Taiwanese, people from, a lot of people from various different Southeast Asian countries and China, Germans, lots of Europeans there. So it's already quite a well-known destination. But for Australians, it's the funniest thing because not only did my parents have good friends that were there, my aunt knew someone that was...
At the same time.
Gosh. My aunt knew someone that was going, and I knew another group of people that I have travelled with before who were also there. Yeah. So it just seems that it's finally kind of crossed into the kind of travel mindset of Australians. And
did you need a visa to go there, Pete?
No.
No, so Australians don't need a visa.
You just rock up.
Which is good news.
I love that.
Yeah.
So before we get into the places, how easy is it to get from Australia?
Well, you would fly on an airline that would take you, like I flew to Doha. Another friend of mine came from, she came from France, and so she had to fly to another country in between. Yeah. So it's not something, I don't think there's any airlines that fly directly into Tbilisi.
But it's easy with one stop.
Yep.
So one stop in the Middle East, for example. Or,
I mean, of course, it does often mean an annoying layover. Mm. I mean, or like 4 or 5 hours, which can be really, really boring. But there's not, you know, there's not hundreds of flights going to Tbilisi. So you do have to stop off. And you can actually fly. There is another town that's very highly recommended, another city, which is called Batumi, which is closer to the Black Sea.
So that was going to ask, because if you fly in from Middle East to Tbilisi, so that will be your first stop, but there is another option. So doesn't have to be Tbilisi.
It doesn't have to be, no. It, as a matter of fact, a lot of people suggest that you do check out Batumi because it's supposed to be gorgeous. And, you know, Tbilisi is actually quite a big city.
So you arrive, you've landed, you're looking gorgeous, you've come off the airplane. What were your first impressions when you come here in Tbilisi? Wow.
Well, the first thing you should do is don't try to get a taxi from the airport.
Right. Okay.
So one of my friends got completely ripped off. She got paid like the equivalent of $100 Australian by this taxi driver. And he, you know, gave her a shot of local fire water. But in actual fact, what we did, two of my friends had arrived before me and they got me onto a taxi app called Bolt.
Right. And this is a bit of a travel tip that you're onto here because always ask for a meter to be turned on.
Yeah.
Or apps. There are so many transfer apps these days that you really do not need to rely on these rogue taxi drivers that are going to take
exactly.
you for a ride.
Yeah. So I had downloaded Bolt before I got there. Now, of course, it does mean that you do have to have your data organised. Mm. You can buy SIM cards at the airport. I didn't do that because I was not quite well organised, but I did have the app already downloaded, so I booked the app when I was there. It is a little bit uncomfortable because you're like, well, I don't obviously speak Georgian because Georgian is a language of its own. Okay. It's not at all resembling any other language. And their lettering is very, very, very pretty, but it looks like a decoration. It looks like a wall decoration. Right, okay. It does not look like, like actual letters to me. So I was good in that sense. Like, I was organised. The Bolt driver, you know, it's the same as catching any other
Uber, you name it.
You know, you just have to stand there and look for the number plate and you know, you get harassed by the taxi drivers, it's true. But
so the app is in English. You can get by with them.
Well, Bolt is an international app and it's available in a lot of countries.
Interested. So, is Georgia cheap?
Georgia is cheap.
That's another big tick there. It has a destination.
Yeah,
it's not a European place that's gone off the radar.
No, I mean you can catch taxis around the city, and that seems to be perfectly fine. It's only an airport, but we would catch a taxi either by Bolt or by just walking out on the street, and you would always ask them first. We want to go here. What is the price? Mm. And you try to get them to give you a price beforehand. And you would take a 15-minute taxi ride and it would be equivalent of like $5 Australian.
Cool.
The food is inexpensive and delicious.
Wow.
And there's lots of, I mean, we'll have a whole subject of food,
segment. You're a foodie, though, aren't you? So that's big coming from you.
Yep. So, and Tbilisi itself has, you know, like the old town. We stayed in a an Airbnb.
How did you choose your accommodation? Because I know, there are so many different places to stay at these days. There's B&Bs, there's Airbnb, there's hotels, you name it.
Well, look, you know, sometimes I am not as sometimes I do find staying in an Airbnb can be frustrating because it depends on when you arrive and it depends on when you want to leave. So sometimes you're arriving there, obviously, and it's before you can check in.
Yeah, you always want to have those self-check-in ones where you put in a couple of numbers and you can let yourself into the place.
Yeah, they're fine, aren't they? That's true. But often, of course, you can't get in until 2 o'clock. So you have to have that if you're going to be there beforehand, you have to have that negotiation with the person you're booking it through in advance to say, well, the room might not be ready, but can I drop my bags off? So the good news is a friend of mine had organised it in advance and I just actually showed up.
Love your mornings. Joy 94.9.
You're listening to The Escape Hour on Joy 94.9. This lovely Sunday morning. And today we're in Georgia with our guest Fiona.
Yes, I am being both host and guest.
I can't believe you've been to Georgia. I really can't.
So good.
Multi-skilled.
It is real. I mean, yes, multi-skilled, absolutely.
You do a bit of everything around here, don't you?
I can. I tell a lot of people what to do and where to go.
Do you?
That is actually what I'm really good at.
Did you do that in Georgia?
Actually, no. Because I travel with a couple of friends. Mm. And when you travel with a couple of friends, you got to work together on travelling and you don't want to tell anyone to do anything or go anywhere. Yeah. That's not making for a happy holiday.
Were you surprised by Georgia?
I was. Well, mostly because, I didn't know what to expect. Mm. Now, even though I had heard a lot about the wine, what I guess I didn't expect was that, first of all, that Tbilisi would be such a big city, and second of all, that it would be so run down.
Right.
So it's quite a poor country, which makes it cheap, but there are all these beautiful Art Deco buildings that are just crumbling. Like literally crumbling in front of you. Uh-huh. And some buildings, which people live in, you walk in and the staircases are sloping and the windows and doors are falling off. But one of the thing you have to remember about Georgia is it has a really insanely terrible history.
Right.
So it only became independent in 1991 from the USSR.
Yep.
And after it became independent, it went into like an internal... Look, I wouldn't say a civil war, but it became chaos. Their corruption was insane. There wasn't any electricity, or there was only partial electricity. Some places didn't have any running water. There was violence in the streets. Mm. It went into like this insane free-for-all. And, you know, I went on this fantastic brutalist building tour, because I'm a bit of a brutalist architecture fan, and the young man who took us on this tour said he remembers going to primary school and you had to take your own lights to primary school because there was no lights in the school. So for even young people living there today in their mid-20s or 30s, they went through this experience in the early 90s. And so in 2002 or three, they had what was known as the Rose Revolution. So the person who became the president or prime minister was basically put in there by the USSR.
Oh, was it?
No. Had a younger guy who said, look, this is not enough. This country is incredibly corrupt. We need to fix this problem. And the Rose Revolution was called that because the young revolutionaries went into the parliament carrying roses.
Uh-huh.
So it was a peaceful coup and they got rid of the old guy who, you know, had done a great job trying to bring bring Georgia into its first independence in hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And the first thing that the new president or prime minister did was he fired the entire police force.
Uh-huh.
Every single one of them, and hired a completely new police force where they got paid properly, were better educated and were uncorruptible. And even to this day, the policemen are just lovely. In fact, you see a lot of them sitting around cafes just chatting with the locals.
And the tourists.
Yeah, really cute. It began to be a joke for us. We were like, oh, there's a local policeman again.
Did you get to take pictures of them?
I think I might have tried to sneak a picture of them in a cafe.
Oh, have you got a calendar?
Well, you know, it's interesting you might say that because at the beginning we thought that Georgian men were not that attractive. But I tell you, this is the thing. The older Georgian men kind of short, a bit rotund, actually a lot rotund, and but the young men, well, they were tall and slender and pretty hot, actually. Yeah. So I don't know what happens there.
I don't know about you guys, but I find on every holiday that I go on, by the end of the trip, everyone's hot.
That must be just relaxation.
Yeah, it must be, yes.
So in Tbilisi, what did you get up to?
Well, you went on a tour. So we did a brutalist walking tour, which was fantastic because and the brutalist buildings are not loved by the locals because they're all Russian concrete buildings from the 1970s. And extraordinary stories. Like there's this. Well, that's a point of view, you see, because brutalism is traditionally considered to be very ugly, but it has found new favour. So you could do brutalism tours in many cities around the world now. Some are striking buildings that look like all these containers on top of each other, which is like the bank. It was supposed to be a water reservoir, but when they started digging it, they found all of these remains and artifacts. So they decided to turn it into an archaeological museum, but nothing ever happened. So it's totally, like, all of these brutalist buildings are often decrepit and undone. And we heard some hilarious stories because in Georgia, apparently, nothing ever gets finished. Nothing gets finished. It's all started, but nothing ever gets finished. So there's a lot of half-baked architectural projects from the 60s and 70s and 80s around that are hilarious because they're not finished. And all these extraordinary sort of giant bell towers and statues. And so they're Greek Orthodox. Oh, well, not Greek Orthodox. They're Orthodox in that tradition. So there's a lot of churches and things like that, which, you know, I didn't really visit because there were so many other things to do. Beautiful museums, Museum of Fine Art, Museum of Visual Arts, a Modern Art Museum, and there is the Treasury, which is also beautiful because the Georgians were some of the best metal craftspeople back in the Iron Ages. In the Iron Age, like in around the 3rd and 4th century, they had the most sophisticated techniques of making jewellery and armour and objects made out of beautiful metal work, and just looks incredibly sophisticated, more beautiful than, I mean, I haven't been to Egypt, it's true, but beautiful objects and jewellery. So if you love that sort of thing and design and decoration, so there's a lot of that, but not the spectacular buildings you would have in Iran, for example.
Are they a proud people?
They are a very proud people because they have had to survive so much. In the 1920s, when the Russian, because they were run by the Russian Soviet Union before it became the USSR, and when the Bolsheviks came in around early part of the 20th century, they came into Georgia and they murdered all the intelligentsia, all of the wealthy people, any artists, any historians, artists, lecturers, university, anyone who could. They basically just slaughtered them, hundreds and hundreds of people, entire families of wealthy people.
Aristocrats.
Gone. So incredibly brutal history, and that, I think, is an important part of the kind of like that mindset. And one of the funniest things about the Georgians is they're really lovely, but they don't smile very much. So when you go into a restaurant, you know, they don't actually sort of smile at you. And it's not because they're unhappy, but they just just don't really smile a lot.
Okay.
Which
is difficult
kind of
to get the social cue.
It's difficult to get the social cue. And they just so don't seem to quite
grasp
that, you know, hospitality is, you know, super friendly.
Essential.
And stuff. They're not, there's nothing gushy.
Yeah. Did the foodie in you come out?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So we did a cooking course. Now, with this cooking course, it was basically going to somebody's kitchen. Well, not basically, that's exactly what it was. So we went to their house, which is in the suburbs, and the daughter met us, and she was a ski instructor who spoke perfect English. And while the ski season was not on, she was helping her mum with her... And her mum was a teacher or something like that. But she loved, her mother was very gregarious and she loved interacting with people from all over the world. So she'd started these cooking, I don't even want to call it a class because it's not really a class. So basically she took us to the local market. We bought a whole lot of food. She said, what do you want to cook? Because we'd already been there for a while. And I was like, I want to cook the eggplant thing with the walnuts in the middle and this. And then my friend Sue said, I want to cook that chicken in milk thing. And so, and then there were a couple of other dishes that she was like, okay, we're going to make this, this and this. And then we came back to her house and basically sat in their kitchen while she and her mum, and they had a helper there, prepared food and ostensibly told us how to cook it, but there was no recipe. A
few glasses of wine later?
Well, yeah, because everyone grows wine. Everyone makes their own wine.
And if I remember right, Aidan was telling us on a previous Escape Hour that they've got this type of urns.
Yeah,
they're
so...
They're not called urns, but to mature the wine?
Quervery. So it's spelled Q-V-E-R-V-I. Quervery. So that is the traditional way to make Georgian wine. But the thing you have to keep in mind in Georgia is that they have over 400 grape varieties.
Oh, wow.
And they have two different ways of making wine because they do have a European way of making wine as well. But the Quervery wine is the traditional method and they have these large clay amphoras, really, that live underground. So they never come out, but they live underground and they put in the whole bunch, not the leaves apparently, but the stems, and the grapes, and they put the whole lot in there and then it ferments that way. So it has, you know, you hear a lot of talk in Melbourne dining areas and around Australia about natural wine. So natural wine is a minimal intervention. So they don't fuss with it. They don't ferment it in lots of different ways. They ferment it. They, after a certain period of time, they scoop all the bits off the top, get rid of that, and then they turn that into something else. And then another different type of drink. And sometimes they would take it out of the quervery and then they will also do a double ferment in the European style.
Mm.
But anyway, so you drink a lot of wine that tastes really like light and doesn't taste sort of super alcoholic.
I was going to say that sounds like it would be strong in alcohol, but it isn't.
It might be strong in alcohol, but it has a freshness. Like, you know, sometimes when you've got a really refined European-style wine and you can sort of hold it to your nose and it smells a bit fumey from the alcohol, but you don't... I mean, this tastes so fresh that, you know, we went to this cooking class at 9 a.m. and when we walk in, there's a platter of cheese because they are insane dairy products freaks, like cheeses. And there was a flask of wine and they were like, here, would you like wine? And we were like, oh.
Why not?
And it doesn't feel heavily alcoholic. Mm. Therefore, I drank a lot more.
Good morning. You're on the Escape Hour. This is Joy 94.9. We're in Georgia with Fiona. We'll be back in a moment.
I was at work.
I was riding my horse.
I was microwaving a watermelon.
My iguanas escaped.
There are lots of reasons why you may have missed your favourite show, but don't worry, because our podcast team has you covered. They'll work through rain, hail and national glitter shortages to bring you the best bits of every show. Visit joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab or head to the iTunes Australia podcast store and subscribe to your favourite shows for free. Thanks to our podcasters, you'll never feel guilty about missing a show again. joy.org.au.
Good morning, this is the Escape Hour. It's Sunday, you're on Joy 94.9 and gosh, it just seems like yesterday that Fiona was in Georgia. She's a worldwide traveller, travels to the most exotic destinations. And I just can't believe you've been to Georgia. It is one of the new ish places to go to.
It certainly is, and very well worth consideration for so many reasons, aside from the fact that you get to say, I've been to Georgia, and people go, wow. That's really interesting.
So you've done Tbilisi and you absolutely adored it because of its weird architecture and you did a cooking course. What was the countryside like?
Well, you know, it is funny because after a few days in Tbilisi, we were like, oh man, actually, we need to get out of here.
Really?
Because it was it's hectic. It's surprisingly hectic, which I didn't expect.
Is it easy to get around? Or
look, there's only one underground railway which goes four stops one way, four stops the other way, and it was built by the Russians. And I did use it, and it is cheap and it is fast, but it only goes four stops one way. And however, you can catch these yellow sort of local little minibuses called Minsnookies or Minsnookies or something, although I didn't catch one. We just basically caught taxis, zipped around, and we did a lot of walking. I think I used to do an average like 25K a day.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Walking, walking, walking.
Now, before we move out of the big city, though, I know Stefan has done a little bit of research on GLBTI rights in Georgia, so maybe we should just touch on that.
Yes, Stefan.
Yeah, on World Wide Wave, we had Georgi Tabagari, who is works at the Pride Center at Tbilisi, and there's a couple of podcasts there. And Fiona, you mentioned that it was the country was quite entrenched in religion, Orthodox, and it was saying that although they've got the rights there, because there's a wish to join the EU, so they need to have all the anti-discrimination laws, all these things set up. There is quite a lot of pushback from the population in terms of LGBTIQ rights. There were some riots recently in November following the release of a movie which has some gay scenes in it, and also there's the laws, there's a protection, but in terms of the attitude of the population, it's still a little bit difficult for LGBTIQ.
Yeah, I mean, I had heard about the laws being in place. It is a very, I would say it's a very conservative country. I think that they've got other things. For example, they have very, very, very high unemployment there. They also have a very poor education system. So while the young people are probably trying to kind of remake themselves as Europeans, because they really think of themselves, they're very strongly European, I do think that there's probably a lot of the older people just conservatism in general.
And I think that's what Georgi was telling us. The priorities are a little bit different at the moment. And until you fix some other underlying things, it's going to be a little bit more difficult to bring the LGBTIQ rights.
That's true. I mean, it's survival for a lot of people. You know, they don't make much money. Unemployment is high. So, you know, it is probably, whether you could say it's inconveniently not a priority because there are other things.
Country in transition.
It is definitely a country in transition. They do want to be a part of the EU, and they're working hard to, they're spending money restoring a lot of the beautiful old buildings where they can. I mean, it's going to take them forever. But the challenge is their current president. So they've got a prime minister and a president. So the president was ousted recently because he was corrupt, but he's the one that puts the person in, the prime minister, into power. Their current prime minister is a female prime minister who does not even speak Georgian.
Oh, dear.
She was raised in France.
Oh.
And I spoke to a number of people who were very angry because they've got a prime minister. They're probably not used to having a female prime minister, but also one who doesn't speak Georgian and did not grow up there.
Very strange.
Yeah, so there's a few people in a bad mood, and they have a way to go.
So I think if people are interested beyond travelling there and looking at LGBTQ issues, I think the couple of podcasts we had for World Wide Wave is a really good complement to this.
And would they just look up Georgia or?
So on the Joy website, World Wide Wave, and then all the podcasts are there, and it's really,
that's fantastic.
A really good compliment.
I think that sounds wonderful.
So from Tbilisi?
From Tbilisi, we went north to Kazbegi. And Kazbegi is the mountain, a beautiful mountain region, and it's quite a hilarious drive.
Is that
to
part
get
of the Caucasus?
Yes, that's when you go right up into the Caucasus, and there's quite a lot of mountain areas. I mean, reading the descriptions of all these mountain areas along the border of Russia, we wanted to go and see more, but obviously, you know, with time.
Did it blow you away?
So beautiful. So you drive up what's known the Georgian Military Highway, which is the main route from Russia through to Tbilisi.
Yep.
So you've got this highway, which is essentially a two-lane road,
yep.
maybe sometimes three. It's essentially a two-lane road. It has all the trucks carrying trade. It has all these cars. It has goats and sheep and cows, and it's like, and then it winds through this ski town. Uh-huh. So it's like a major highway from Melbourne to Sydney going through Falls Creek. I mean, it's insane. There were, and the road is not really in great shape. And so, like, an entire truck with all these cars on it had gone into a ditch. Uh-huh. And anyway, it's quite an adventure getting there. So we went to Casbagie. Casbagie is famous for like the scenery we were staying in. We sort of splurged at this lovely hotel called the Rooms Hotel, and it's built in an old sanitarium, and it's got this massive balcony, and you just look out onto the most spectacular mountain scenery.
And you were locked away.
Yes, I could have been locked away there forever. And they had a swimming pool, had a really nice massage there, and yeah, okay. So the rooms were tiny, but and cost a fair bit, but they had a beautiful restaurant, they had a cocktail bar, it was worth it. Anyway, so we stayed up there in Casbagie and just saw and just basically the beautiful fresh mountain air.
Many walking trails for you to go on.
Lots. So mm-hmm. One of the walking trails we went on was to this old Georgian monastery from the Middle Ages. Yeah, so there's a lot of 12th, 13th, 14th churches and monasteries. This one was extremely popular, and even though the hike up there was lovely and, you walk past shepherds and cows and through little villages, when we got there, it was so bloody crowded because you could also drive up there. So you could just imagine all these tourists. They just drive up there and get, doing their selfie, bloody.
We had some clients, a mother and daughter, and they decided that they were going to go to Tbilisi, so I looked at Tbilisi, and then they said, nope, don't want to stay there. Well, two nights there will be enough. We're going to hire a car and we're just going to drive around the countryside and everything. I'm just fascinated by how safe that is for women. You know, when you look at countries and you kind of think, it's haven't been there before. And they said, no, we weren't even looked at. We were just travelling, yeah, having a great old time, and it made no difference.
Yeah, no, I had no problems. I mean, walking around Tbilisi at night, leaving restaurants, wandering around, completely safe. Mm. I mean, of course, I think there are certain areas where you think, oh, well, maybe not. But we stayed in a fantastic neighbourhood where there was this beautiful old fabric factory, which they'd turned into this insanely hipster, fabulous hangout with all these restaurants in there that were run by, young people, and little cute little handmade shops and graffiti. And, I mean, the vibe was really fun. Mm. So certainly the young vibe in Tbilisi was really
Did you prefer
fun.
The countryside or the city?
Look, I love some of the things I saw in Tbilisi and some beautiful little stores and crafts and things like that. But the mountains were just stunning. We walked to a beautiful valley that was like just this beautiful, broad, incredible valley with shepherds and mountains and oh.
Was the food different from Tbilisi? The food
In the mountains, the food was a little bit more simple. So a lot of kebabs, which I don't eat, but apparently the kebabs were really delicious.
I was going to ask, for a vegetarian, how easy it is.
Well, as a vegetarian, being a vegan, I think could be challenging, but there was a lot of cheese. Mm. Eggplant, I think I had, I'm an eggplant lover.
Oh, you do like them?
I must have had eggplant for breakfast, lunch and dinner. Yeah. And walnuts in everything, and pomegranate and walnut paste and beans. They make this incredible dish called lobiani, which is a bean dish, which interestingly in India they have a similar dish that's called lobi.
Oh, okay.
So beautiful beans, lots of salads, lots of vegetables. I mean, I must admit after 2 weeks I was kind of like, okay, I think I've had enough Georgian food right now.
Yep.
But it was really, really incredibly delicious. Lots of breads, lots of, rices. I mean, I don't worry too much about my carbohydrates intake when I travel, because what would be the point?
Exactly. Mm. Right. You're travelling.
You're travelling.
Is it a social thing again? Like we often talk about on the show social media. Are you going to be bogged down with your social media and not looking at everything? Or again, is it like a ram where you're, God, this is so beautiful. I'm just out here and I'm experiencing and I don't care about anything else.
Well, social media is perfectly accessible when you're there. So there's no worries about that. I mean, I have a tendency to use apps to find out about my favourite restaurant in this area. Yeah. What's a cool bar here? Where can I go get a wine tasting? So I have a tendency to use apps for things like that. Also, I use my phone quite a lot for directions.
Yep.
Where do I get the subway? How do I get that, up there? So I do use it a lot.
And in terms of practicalities, you were able to get internet easily, a local SIM card.
The local SIM card was a little bit. I mean, we had Wi-Fi in the hotel, in the Airbnb. We mostly relied on Wi-Fi, from Wi-Fi to Wi-Fi. Yeah.
What would a wine connoisseur like yourself, for example, could you do a wine tour where you just jump in the car and just drive from region to region and really get into it?
You could definitely do a wine tour. And I don't know where you would start or where you would end, but you could definitely do a wine tour. I think that there's aspects of Georgian wine which, if you were a certain type of wine lover and you really were stuck in a European wine mindset, you would probably find it difficult because it's not going to fulfill any of your conventional notions of wine, because you look at a wine list and you're like, I know nothing.
Mm.
So I wouldn't recommend driving and doing the wine tour.
Well, that might have happened here in the 70s, but it doesn't anymore, right? Is that?
But there are certainly people that could do wine tours or hiking tours or...
But you mentioned a couple of times that how different the wines are, how different they are from traditional European or more. So what do you mean? I mean, can you...
Well, you can get European wine style wines, European... Georgian wines made in European style, so you can still get that. But you can also go into a wine shop, and in this, they've got the upstairs bit with everything's bottled, and you can ask for a taste of a variety of different things, and you can say, I'd like something that's like a Pinot Noir, and they'll say, well, this would be like it. So you get to know, and I discovered a red grape that I was a really I think it's called a Sapoverdi grape, which I really enjoyed. So I decided to drink that fairly consistently. But underneath in the basement, they just have all these vats. Yep. And you just say, and you make a decision on which wine, and they just fill up a plastic bottle and they give it to you, and it's like the value of, $5. And there's a litre of wine in a plastic container.
And is that something that George is famous for?
Yeah.
Right.
So everyone grows wine. Everyone has grapes in their house. Everyone grows wine. They may not make it at their home, but they would make it at a friend's place up the street.
Okay.
So homemade wine is big. I think that the red wines, I'm a red wine fan. I think the red wines were more palatable than some of the Georgian style white wines, which could be quite cloudy because they have a lot of skin contact and a little bit more on the pink end. And they could be kind of funky. Mm. Yeah, I think funky is probably the right word
for it. Did you feel as though you had to... book with a travel agent, or did you need to go through a tour group, or again, because it's such a new destination, was it something right? No, we're just going to go there, we're going to book a couple of hotels and we're going to do our own things when we arrive.
We just booked it all ourselves. Right. Yeah.
And that's easy to do.
Easy to do, yeah. I mean, of course, when you go somewhere, you're still, it's confusing. You're like, I don't know about this and I don't know about that. But you kind of make a decision and then you get there, and if it's not quite right, you just go, oh, okay, well, let's try and see if we can get ourselves.
But you didn't walk away from there thinking, oh, I wish we'd done an escorted tour or anything like that?
No. And what we did was we hired drivers to get us longer distances. Yeah. And in some cases, you'd be lucky and you could hire a driver who spoke English and you could ask a lot of questions along the way. And in some cases, you'd get a driver who spoke no English, and it was hard to get them just to stop.
I was going to ask in terms of language, because you mentioned at the beginning that the language was very different, especially the alphabet and the writing.
Yes.
So it's easy to navigate if you don't have a translator or a guide?
Well, most young people speak English. Mm. The older people don't speak English. So if you need a destination, you have to have it written in Georgian characters as well. So often you would see if you could bring it up on a translation app so you could show it to them in Georgian characters because they wouldn't always understand it in English. Mm. Or European characters.
You just need to have your travel hat on, don't you?
Yeah, you do. And you have to be a little bit sort of organised and be fairly clear with in your head with your expectations and don't just rock up there and just think that everyone's going to understand your Nonga English.
Of course, and I think you probably need to have this attitude anywhere you go.
Yeah,
so that's a really good attitude.
But you know, a lot of the younger people do speak English. Even though they have a very poor education system.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
The Escaper on this lovely Sunday morning with Russ and our guest today, Fiona, talking Georgia.
Yeah, so Kazbegi, beautiful mountain climbing, easy, like not hard, but just beautiful walks, incredible fresh air. And from there, we went to Kaheti. And Kaheti is the wine-growing region.
I'd stop you here because there seem to have been wine all over from Tbilisi to the previous place to now Kazbegi. Yeah.
So there is wine everywhere.
But this is even more wine there.
Well, this is kind of like you would say the Yarra Valley, for example. Mm.
God, so you must have been having to wipe that red wine off your lips every 5 minutes of your
now,
table.
I should note that if you don't drink wine, you should still visit. Please do not
think...
I've
done a lot of wine talking on this
destination. That's right. Please do not, because the food is incredible. But if you don't drink wine, there was some craft beer I found, and if you don't drink alcohol at all... Please do not let it stop from going.
See, my thing is the Caucasus. What you've told me about the mountains, I've always wanted to go to the Caucasus Mountains. So.
And the different places that we wanted to go. And, you know, in some cases when we went in one particular valley, the guidebook said, take your passport because if you go far enough into the valley, you will find soldiers that are minding... You might find Russian soldiers or you might find local soldiers and they may ask you for your passport.
Mm. Warning.
So you just have to be prepared.
So you stayed in a hotel there, but would you be able to camp if you were so inclined?
Yeah, I think there is some camping. Yes, I think that you can camp there. I think I saw a campground, absolutely, in the village. And then we were in Kaheti, and when we were in Kaheti, we stayed in a guest house that was... cheap, really cheap. And, I mean, I thought totally charming. One of my friends didn't think it was so charming and she left. Because she didn't like, you know, I mean, it was a home, but it was really lovely. And we would have breakfast was included. Yep. And we could have dinner there if we wanted, which was all this incredible food and wine for 10 gel per night, wow. Which is, the currency's called gel. So that was like literally about $4 for mountains of food.
I always find that stuff interesting about guest houses. I've been to one where, you know, the entire family stand around you and watch you eat the breakfast and see if there's anything else they can... So I kind of get how that might feel uncomfortable, but it's, you know, it's a good way to meet the locals.
It's certainly a different way. And the lovely hostess was charming and spoke excellent English, and her husband, Maho, didn't speak such great English, but was such a hilarious... He's so funny. And he took us on a couple of driving tours. Yep. So you can leave... the town, which was called Talavi, was the main town, and we went around, and there's a lot of old a lot of old churches from the 12th and 13th and 14th century. Sorry, I forgot what period I was talking about. So a lot of churches and then a lot of sort of details of, you know, martyrs and people with swords and dragons and all sorts of things like that. So that was quite fun. And so I did love that kind of mystical element. You know, there's all this sort of
sounds still quite grounded in old time as well. In terms
but it's a very old country. And so, you know, there's kings in castles and there's a queen over there. And then this queen, you know, was famous because she said, no, I'm not going to become Christian, boo to you. And, you know, so lots of great old sort of stories.
And you're not talking about the gays, are you?
No. I think the gays might have been thrown on the fire.
What I like about these new destinations as they're coming into the forefront is there's just no commercialism, and you can actually go and explore and just feel like, wow, this is me experiencing a real country and as raw as it gets. And that's what Georgia sounds like.
And when you get to the little old churches, there's always like a whole array of people selling nuts and fruit and knitted goods and little crafts. And they do this really weird nut sort of thing on string. So they have these walnuts on a string, which they then dip in this gooby fruit paste, and then it dries. I mean, great if you're hiking.
Yeah.
But they do have some weird foodie things. So we would wander around, and then we'd go to a couple of wineries and, you know, beautiful little villages up in the mountains with like beautiful old fortress walls. And yeah, it was just gorgeous.
And from A to B was driving?
Yeah, we hired drivers the whole time. And because there were three of us, it made it cost effective. But we went on a 5-hour trip one day in a very uncomfortable bus with someone who didn't speak English. But it got us there faster than it would have been. It would have been like an 8-hour drive in a little bit of one of those little yellow buses called Minsuku thingies. Not that I remember what they're called, but hiring drivers was pretty easy.
And easy to do. You were able to source them.
Yeah, we just asked it at our accommodation most of the time. And in one case, when we were leaving Tbilisi, I contacted our friend Aiden, and he got us a really lovely driver. So that's how we got around. It would cost us like $30 each.
And that's a nice connection to have.
Mm. Aiden's there with his lovely girlfriend, and they have bought a property and are making wine over there, as well as bringing a Georgian wine to Australia. So it's well worth the experience if you want to go somewhere new. It feels really European, but it's got a lot of gorgeous natural environment. And if you want, you can go to the east and go to the Black Sea, and that's a whole other side of Georgia. I was just on one tiny little bit.
It's all new adventure in Europe and very exciting, exciting.
It's still fairly unexplored, really, not mass tourism.
Well, no, I think that you will find there are numbers of tourists there, just not a lot of Australians.
Oh.
So you will find there are busloads of people in certain places.
Russians, I assume.
Lots of Russians. Mm. And, you know, the Georgians, they don't like the Russians.
So what if Stefan and his lovely husband went? Would he be looking at twin share accommodation, do you think?
I think that you could. I think that if you were renting a hotel room, I think that you could probably do a double room. Mm. I don't think that would be in Tbilisi. I think that would probably be fine. But I would recommend having it checking that first, or of course get an Airbnb.
Well, good morning to both of you. This is the Escape Hour on Joy 94.9. I can't believe I've been to Georgia today, Fiona.
It has been a fun trip. Thanks for coming, Stefan and Russ. Been really fun.
We really hope you enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We're hoping you're enjoying our new hour. We are.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're much more sprightly.
We are every Sunday morning, because we don't go to bed, do we? Have a great day, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.